From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Why. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov. In the early 1990s, bioethicist Art Kaplan arrived at the University of Pennsylvania.
I met a young investigator named Jim Wilson, who was very excited about something that I hadn't heard about too much, gene therapy.
Wilson went on to tell Kaplan about the promise of his research.
He thought if he could engineer a virus to carry, let's say, specially designed DNA to fix what was wrong in the human DNA, say for cystic fibrosis, muscular dystrophy, maybe you could actually repair the cells in people who had these diseases and restore them to health.
But one of Wilson's clinical trials at Penn resulted in the death of a young man named Jesse Gelsinger. And that incident rippled across Philadelphia's biotech industry and the medical world. It's been 20 years since that tragic incident. Why did the trial go so wrong? And what lessons are researchers drawing from his case as we enter a new age of gene therapy? Today on The Why, the legacy of Jesse Gelsinger. Mayor Rindy wrote about Jesse Gelsinger for Distillations, an online magazine published by the Science History Institute in Philadelphia. Mayor, tell me about Jesse Gelsinger.
Jesse Gelsinger, 20 years ago, was an 18-year-old boy living in Tucson, Arizona, with his family. He was finishing up high school. He loved motorcycles and professional wrestling. Not a particularly ambitious kid, his family would say, but a nice kid. He did have a very rare condition called OTCD, which is a problem where ammonia builds up in the bloodstream. And if too much of that builds up, it's very dangerous and can ultimately be fatal. So he was dealing with that condition for all of his life. He had to be very careful about his diet. He had to be careful about eating protein, which could worsen the condition. He also took something like 50 pills a day.
So how did Jesse end up in this trial at Penn?
Jesse was being treated by a doctor at Penn who specialized in OTCD. And this doctor was working with the researcher who was heading the trial, Dr. James Wilson, and helping him find patients to participate. And that's how Jesse got connected to the trial, heard about it, and decided that he wanted to help out.
Right. And Art Kaplan, the bioethicist, he said this was not going to cure Jesse. Jesse was just taking part to help develop a treatment for OTCD.
It wasn't a cure. It was what's known as a bridge. If this clinical trial worked, you would be able to take a baby who'd been exposed to mother's milk, which they couldn't process and was causing a terrible allergic reaction, let them start, if you will, metabolizing the milk, and survive long enough to then make sure they got on the special diet. No cure, bridge.
Jesse knew about this, but he wanted to help because he'd experienced the disease in a partial form, and he said, I want to help the babies.
So this is a form of gene therapy. What was the state of gene therapy at the time? Like, was this a big conversation in the medical and research community?
Oh, yeah. This was a huge, cutting-edge, very hot technology at the time.
It was the next big thing. The only way I could compare it today is all the arguing we've had about stem cells, that's where gene therapy was. It certainly had its critics. Some people said it's overhyped and overblown, but it had plenty of proponents.
And there had been a few cases, just a few, where some people, some children, had been cured or treated for very serious diseases. So it was considered extremely promising.
So in 1999, Jesse came to Penn to participate in this trial. And what happened?
Well, Jesse flew out here, went in to get the treatment, and he got the injection, and he started to get sick, which is actually pretty much par for the course for these kinds of treatments. I think most of the patients in this trial had gotten a little bit sick, but usually they recovered. In his case, he got worse. He developed jaundice. He went into a coma. He developed a very serious clotting disorder. And the doctors tried all kinds of things to bring him out of it, and just nothing was working. Eventually, he started to suffer organ failure, liver failure, kidney, lung. And at a certain point, they were keeping him alive, but he was brain dead, and there was nothing more they could do. He was taken off life support. That was just 4 days after the treatment began, and he died.
What happened afterward, after this incident?
It soon made national news. Journalists and federal health officials started investigating, and they found quite a few problems with the way the trial was conducted. The doctors who ran the study hadn't told Jesse or his family or the other patients about serious side effects, really serious side effects that had been suffered by some of the patients that could have informed their decisions about whether to stay in the trial. It also turned out Jesse had poor liver function in a test taken before the trial, arguably shouldn't have gotten the treatment at all. The FDA suspended the trial, and later the FDA suspended all human trials at Penn's Institute for Human Gene Therapy.
So what did his family do with, you know, this information?
When these revelations came out, they sued the university. The university settled for an undisclosed amount. Jesse's father, Paul Gelsinger, became kind of an activist on this issue. He testified at a Senate hearing on gene therapy, demanding better oversight of trials and better treatment of patients who are considering participating in trials.
That probably is the thing that hurts the most, is that we were misled, that this was not as ethical as it was presented. And that can't happen.
And what about the doctor, James Wilson, who ran that trial? What happened to him?
Dr. Wilson came under criticism on a few fronts. One was about conflicts of interest, because he had a financial stake in the company that owned the gene transfer technology. And this raised concerns that he may have been rushing the trial or cutting corners or just not doing the trial, not taking the time to do it correctly because he wanted to rush the product to completion and get it on the market. He denies that his financial stakes had any role in the way he conducted the trial. But that was a major concern from that point. So the Institute for Human Gene Therapy, which he headed, was eventually closed down by the university. And he was charged by some federal agencies with a number of violations. And he agreed to stop doing human research for 5 years. He stayed at Penn. He continued doing research, but he couldn't do clinical trials. And in fact, he hasn't done them since then.
So as you said, these were the early days of gene therapy. What happened to the whole field after this incident?
Well, the public really became aware of gene therapy in a big way and in a bad way.
There was a huge backlash. This made the whole field, not only of gene therapy, but all clinical trials in all of medicine, stop and take a look. Why did this happen? Could it have been prevented? What was a young man like Jesse Gelsinger, who was not going to benefit from being in this study at all? How had he come to be allowed to volunteer?
And gene therapy was very stigmatized at this point. And biochemist Jennifer Doudna remembers the aftermath of that time.
You didn't want that in your grants. You didn't want to say, I'm a gene therapist or working on gene therapy. It sounded terrible, right? Yeah. So the scientists just kind of really ran away from it.
The investment in the field dropped off. The number of trials across the country fell sharply. I think they hit their lowest number ever in 2001. This was at a time when government investment in clinical research was declining generally, and the private sector was taking over more often. So I think that happened in gene therapy as well. And eventually money did start to come back in, and the field picked up, especially as it began to have some more successes. And starting around 2012, the number of trials really took off. And this is partly because of the successes and the better technology. the safety improvements, but also because of the discovery of CRISPR.
CRISPR sounds more like a refrigerator compartment than a gene editing tool, but it's giving scientists power they could only imagine before, to easily edit DNA, allowing them to reprogram the genetic code of living things.
It literally is a way to program enzymes to go to exactly the place in the DNA where a change is desired and nowhere else.
And Jennifer Doudna, the biochemist we heard from earlier, is very well known because she basically discovered how to use CRISPR as an editing tool.
And so I think the potential is clearly, you know, very, very exciting. But I think because of the experience with Jesse Gelsinger, at least this is what I hope, yeah, is that, you know, I hope that we don't get ahead of ourselves with this technology.
Even today, when somebody says, let's try out a new treatment and we want to get into human trials, I hear all the time the echo of the death of Jesse Gelsinger, because people say we can only go, say, 3 subjects at a time and we want to stop and see what's going on.
And the man who headed that study, Dr. James Wilson, did Jesse's death change him at all?
Well, initially, it really appeared that his career was in tatters. He did spend a lot of time trying to figure out what went wrong in Jesse's case and came to some conclusions there. And he shifted over to a different kind of virus, which works better with fewer side effects and is now extremely widely used. In fact, he sort of became a founder of the new wave of gene therapy.
So he's still doing gene therapy research even after this?
He's still at Penn. That ban on certain types of work ended. He's now director of Penn's gene therapy program, which is going strong and is very prominent nationally.
A new gene therapy program.
Yeah, it's not the old institute, which was shut down. They had to build back up, and they now have a program again. And in fact, a therapy based on the new type of viruses that he developed, a new type of delivery technology, was just approved by the FDA recently to treat a lethal genetic disease called spinal muscular atrophy. It's the first such approval, and it's really a huge step in gene therapy development. Wilson is very optimistic and excited about the potential future developments and new therapies that are going to be developed in this field. But he's also become something of a voice of caution. He's published papers about some of the technical problems where there are still potential safety issues. And so he says, you know, exercise caution, take your time, make sure you know what you're doing.
Mayor, thanks so much for talking to me about this.
Thanks so much for having me.
Mayor Rindy first reported this story in Distillations, an online magazine published by the Science History Institute in Philadelphia. You can read more about it at sciencehistory.org. The Why is produced by me, Shai Ben-Yaakov, along with Annette John Hall and Alex Stern, with editorial direction from Katie Colinari. Send a tweet at Shai Ben-Yaakov. We'll be back tomorrow.